Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello and welcome along to Soundtracking with me, Edith Bowman, my weekly podcast where I get to dive into the beautiful minds of creatives who work in film, TV and music and talk about how that relationship is, well, just gorgeous. And I'm glad it's gorgeous because it gives us an opportunity to have a different conversation every week about that relationship. Thank you very much for choosing to listen to us. We don't take it for granted that you have a wealth of opportunities and availability of podcasts out there. It is a busy market. So we really appreciate that you have chosen to listen to us. Yeah, it's very much appreciated. We'd also really appreciate it if you could spread the word if you like what you hear. So that could either be by just reposting stuff that we have on socials or genuinely getting in touch with us on email info@edithbowman.com or on socials @soundtrackinguk or just me @edbow and just tell us what you've liked, whether it's something someone said in an episode or whether it's the episode itself that you've loved, a piece of music you've discovered. And whilst we're talking about music, for every episode of the podcast, we create a Spotify playlist. So you can go and listen to the music that's talked about in the episode in its entirety in the order that it's talked about. I always put a link up on edithbowman.com to take you straight through to that. So yeah, if you're like, oh, I like listening to some of the music, so just head over there and subscribe and you'll get every episode of those playlists as they come up with every episode. So there we go. Loads of information ahead of actually the podcast starting this week. Also, just to throw out as well, massive thank you for the response we had to Walter Murch appearing on the podcast last week talking about the anniversary restoration of The Conversation, which also involved actual Francis Ford Coppola liking a story post that we put on Instagram. I know it's a small, insignificant thing to many, but for me, it's a big deal and hopefully might encourage Francis to come on the podcast towards the end of the year to talk about the release of Megalopolis. So cross everything for us. But our latest guests on Soundtracking this week are writer-director Josh Marglin and composer Nick Chubba, who have joined forces on Josh's brilliant and hilarious new film, Thelma. Now, Thelma tells the story of a 93-year-old grandmother who loses $10,000 to a con artist on the phone. With help from a friend and his motorized scooter, she embarks on a treacherous journey across LA to reclaim what was taken from her. Nick's score has echoes of the Ocean's movies and evokes the spirit of action films from the 60s and 70s with a really brilliant kind of jazz sensibility. So we'll begin with one of those, Thelma's theme.
Thank you.
Oh, listen, well, thank you for your patience and congratulations on Thelma. I loved it. I miss my Nana so much, though. In a nice way, though, it made me go and dig out old photo albums and things.
That's
and
nice. I'm so glad.
I called my mom and I was like, oh, yeah, it's so, so lovely. And it's so, it made me laugh so much as well. It's just, yeah, it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful
thing.
Thank
you.
What kind of sparked the idea for writing this project? Where did it come from? Why did you want to tell this story? Why did you want to give us Thelma?
What inspired me to write it was actually a scam incident that happened to my grandma. That's pretty much almost exactly what happens in the movie. She got a call from someone pretending to be me and saying that I was in jail and my nose was broken. And she got really panicked and my family got really panicked. And then luckily in real life, we were able to step in before money actually exchanged hands. It just sort of got my wheels turning and got me imagining what might have happened if she had sent the money and set out to get it back. She'd always just been such a like infallible, like strong, tough, amazing presence in my entire life. So seeing her get tricked that way sort of was alarming and just ended up inspiring me to want to write something that's kind of exploring the moment she was in, but also a testament to her grit and her tenacity and her spirit.
So when you came to write her though as well, and then when you cast someone, you know, as wonderful as June in that role, I mean, just perfection. You know, in terms of how much did it evolve through, you know, this character being embodied by such a huge personality and talent, really?
Well, what's nice is I always wanted it to be June. I always pictured it being June. I honestly had trouble imagining it being anybody else. It was like there was just a big drop on that list of June, and then there are other people who could have been wonderful, I'm sure, but in my mind, it just felt like it's got to be her. She just felt right from the beginning, and she is both an amazing actor, but also has so many of the qualities that I see in my grandma and in the character, and that toughness, but also that sensitivity and that humor, and just the ability to kind of toggle between those really seamlessly. What was nice is that, if anything, it just became kind of the best version of itself. And obviously anytime something gets on its feet, it's going to change. And anytime somebody is actually saying the words and playing the role, it's going to become theirs in a way that's hard to predict. But what was so lovely about June is it just felt like, it doesn't always happen this way, but it felt like such a straight line from kind of writing it to her coming on board to making the thing. Like, I felt lucky that it lined up that way and that she was able to do it. Cause I always wanted it to be her.
I also want to follow up kind of a sequel just on Daniel with Fred in that role again, because I was kind of sad to sort of have to say goodbye to him, because I just think his performance is really beautiful. I thought it was just so natural and so, I don't know, it just felt really sort of responsive and kind of beautifully timed as well with that, because it's, I guess, you know, obviously that character is based on you, really. did Fred kind of talk to you? I mean, he's obviously given it his own spin and stuff, and he's playing the character sort of thing as well. But it's you. You've written it. You've directed it. It's like, you know, there must have been a few questions he had.
He's also such a wonderful actor, and we actually ended up rewriting the part for him, because that part was originally like a, you know, a 30-something-year-old kind of at a different transitional moment in life.
Yeah.
And we watched White Lotus and fell in love with Fred, and then ended up aging the character down, and I'm really glad we did for many reasons. But he was such a perfect guy for the role, and is such a lovely, talented, smart actor and person. And it was funny because, yeah, I mean, it is, he's playing a version of me, but I'm sure he studied me when I wasn't looking, picked up on all my little mannerisms, but
secretly getting old home videos of you and all that.
Yeah, not that I was aware of. He could have gone around my back with that, but I think, in the way that June kind of tapped into the Thelma character and kind of understood that person in some way, I think Fred, and part of why he wanted to do it was that he understood that character and kind of knew how to tap into it. And, you know, our versions of that were not so dissimilar, and he was able to just play it so beautifully and so naturally. He's such a natural actor. He's so good at just making things look alive and easy. It was most useful. I didn't give him like a ton of background on, like, you know, my childhood, so to speak, as much as we just kind of would talk through scenes and talk through moments. And it felt more like a conversation than kind of like an info dump, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. I think that all those relationships in the film are really, just feel really like I've never really seen them being told that way, and they feel so kind of relatable in a way, you know, the mother and father roles well, and that kind of still overprotective nature, and then that special relationship between grandparents, you know, where that responsibility is slightly relinquished and it can be its own thing in a way as well. I just thought they were so brilliantly observed and kind of written as well. And I wondered if you encouraged kind of improvisation at all within some of those scenes, you know, like especially in like that scene in the home, you know, where they're kind of being interrogated by the nurses in a way.
Right.
And then also just in that kind of waiting room area as well. It feels just kind of you're sort of observing on kind of real experiences and real things.
Oh, well, I'm happy to hear that. It's funny you mentioned that scene, because that's probably the one that was, there's not a ton of improv in the shoot. There wasn't a ton of improv in the shoot, but those scenes in particular were, I think it's twofold. They were both written to be kind of chatty and overlappy and feel really kind of as natural as they could in that way. And you know, I was lucky with Clark and Parker and Fred and Nicole and Quinn and that whole group to just have a bunch of people who were really comfortable with that kind of naturalism and kind of off the cuffness. But also, I would say if there was a scene where there was a little improv, it's that one. Like there's a couple little riffs or a couple little back and forths or moments that were definitely not in the script that kind of got added in that scene. Cause I think, you know, some scenes felt like they could support it more than others. And that one, because of its, you know, the nature of the kind of back and forthiness and kind of the interrogation going on, it felt like there was room for a little bit of that. And
yeah.
Nicole's so good at that. And, you know, Clark and Parker were great at that. And everybody was just like, that was their, you know, Quinn and Fred too. I was like, I should say everybody, because honestly, everybody was really good at that. But that was there wasn't a ton of improv overall, but in that scene, actually, there's a little bit.
What was the beginning of the conversations with the score? Because the music's absolutely brilliant. It's kind of like, I almost feel like it's kind of June's been dropped in like an Ocean's film or something. Do you know what I mean? It's like with a kind of, with a yes. David Holmes kind of soundtrack, kind of egging her on sort of thing. It's the energy of it's just absolutely brilliant. What were the, you know, Nick, what were the conversations that you had with regards to, yeah, what the story needed or what you thought it needed, what you thought it felt like it needed?
Well, thank you for saying that. I love the Ocean's movies, so I take that as a high compliment. I was lucky enough that Josh was thinking about music really early before he started shooting. So everything was based on the script and the initial conversations. And I think, you know, the early conversations that the pace was going to be somehow like indicating pace and tempo and energy was going to be one of the things that we needed to like focus in on, but keeping it small, not like in a big way, but making sure that the palette, the way you were getting that pace across felt appropriate to the movie and not sort of like so big that it felt like you were making fun of her or you're making fun of the subject. So I think those are the early kind of things we talked about. And then we also talked about the emotional side, which felt like it was going to have to come from an organic place and piano and things like that. But it was started off pretty general. And then it was definitely a process of discovery as I would write stuff and send it to him while he was shooting and talking about it a little bit. And then my whole thing is to try and get as much music to him as possible so that when he like goes to sit down to edit, at least there's some sort of jumping off point, even if it's not totally right. We can try these initial ideas and then go from there. It's just easier to explain that, to explain through music than like through words almost, I guess. Yeah.
what was the reality of kind of your setup and your band? Because it feels like a kind of like an awesome jazz band that we could watch in a, you know, kind of, I'd be really happy with a live playback over the film. Do you know what I mean? That would be awesome.
Yeah.
That kind of jazz.
That would be awesome.
That jazz flute kind of giving it big licks. It would be wicked.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that because everything we did was actually separate, but it's awesome that it sounds like a live band. Yeah.
All separate.
Everything was recorded individually and then sort of collaged together or cut up and put together. So we would do just getting a big net of material. So like we went to this studio in LA called East West, which is actually the studio that Lalo Schifrin recorded the original Mission Impossible theme song in. So it was like the perfect serendipitous like place to go. And we just went in there with this great drummer named Jake Reed, and we had screens set up and he brought all his drums, like every kind of drum from like regular kits to like, I don't even remember what it was called. Like, I forget this thing that he brought, and it's like there's two balls hitting the drum. I forget what it's called.
Oh, I've got my kids, I've got one of them.
Yeah, you've seen those.
It's got like it's got a little ball that kind of bounces and hits each side.
Yeah, it's got two and they sort of smack against. I have a great video of him and he looks like he's almost like praying or something. He's so concentrating so hard. So we would just do that and we'd had screens and like for like stuff like the scooter chase. It was very open. It was like, what do you think would be cool? Like, and I'd have these sketches, like I like the structure, but he would like add all this amazing, these fills and like, you know, new grooves and stuff. And I would then like go home and like chop it up and create a little folder of like Jake Reed material that I could then impose it together and have it hit the cuts and do all the stuff you need to do to score the scene properly. But the idea is that it all comes from a place of performance and reaction to the picture, and it was definitely improvisatory, like in a sort of jazzy kind of way.
Vision of like a great band in one room all kind of, you know, vibing.
Yeah, I mean, that was the idea that I wanted to sound like that because the whole concept was like everything needed to be, I wanted it all to be like her perspectives, her action movies are like, you know,
she's being Tom like, Cruise basically, you know, that's her.
She's being Tom Cruise, or she's being like like, you know, Steve McQueen in Bullet, something where like her references are like those kind of movies where all the action movies used to just have jazz soundtracks for, you know, like in the 60s and 70s, it was just like, it's like, oh, it's a chase scene. It's just a big band. And so like, I thought that was like, if she had her movie playing in her head, she'd be hearing jazz. So it was like, when she goes going up the staircase, it's like jazz flute. Yeah.
So who was playing flute? Did they also just get a kind of big room with lots of flutes to play with?
Yeah. We did the same room with this guy. two different flute players. One we went to East West with a flute player named Tim McKay, and then another guy did remote, Dan Kaneyuki, and they both went to USC with me. So Jake Reed went there too. It's just people I knew from school, and they're That's just cool. great
It was
players.
Kind of an Ocean's 11 process of you recruiting musicians. Like you were,
yeah, you could say like, that.
You were kind of like building the team in your own little Ocean's way, and like, being like, yeah, I need you. Like, we need a drummer.
Yeah.
Guy, and you kind of just pulled each one of these people in.
Someone needs to make that actual film, the kind of musical version of Oceans, like musicians as opposed to kind of, you know, someone needs to make that. I love that as well. That's so cool. We'll be right back. I love that scene as well, where she arrives at the kind of, you know, at the destination. For people who haven't seen the film, I don't want to spoil too much, but when she arrives at the destination, or a destination, and that she makes her way from the front of the shop to the back, it's such a great and respectful scene. And so funny though as well, just from the reaction, you know, from him watching outside the window and kind of sort of egging her on, sort of thing, like, especially when she kind of steps over, not to keep mentioning Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible, but you know, that kind of, when he drops down and he's got to navigate through all the laser things and stuff. It's Thelma's version of that, really, isn't it?
Completely. That's that was the concept for that sequence. 100% was like, what's the version of that kind of sequence you would see in an action movie, but shrunken down to something, you know, much, much smaller and much more daily life, but still threatening for her, and you know, still has its dangers and has its perils, but we're kind of along for the ride and trying to, you know, the ethos of the movie and the ethos of the music were similar in that way of just trying to be like, what's the appropriate size and how can we do this in a way where there isn't such a discordance, where it feels like we're going parody or we're punching down or we're poking fun. Because I think something we discovered early was like, if the music's too big, or if the, you know, the camera's too aggressive, like there were so many ways it could tip broad and tip silly. And it was all about just trying to be restrained enough, but also energetic enough within those confines to kind of fuel the thing, but never feel like we're kind of poking fun. I think Nick puts it really well when he talks about scoring from her perspective, wanting to be on the journey with her, not kind of, you know, cutting wide and going quiet and realizing, oh, it's so small and so little. Like, that just wasn't the alchemy for this one.
Enough films about the older generation that kind of celebrate them. You know, there's so much in the film that kind of make you, you know, like I was saying, I kind of dug out loads of old photo albums and kind of makes you really kind of consider how much you take the people that you have. There's a great line in it, isn't it, about kind of about the people that you love and about not taking them for granted in a way. It's such an entertaining, funny film, but there's a lot in there. There's a lot of kind of food for thought on so many subjects in there as well. And one of the things that I came away thinking was kind of like, well, the older generation are brilliant and we kind of need to celebrate them more in more films like this, where it's like, you're not taking the piss. You're not kind of diminishing their role. And I don't know whether that was something you were consciously trying to do or, I don't know.
For me, the piece of it that was always really conscious was just the idea that I wanted it to be a movie about these older characters, but not to feel like a movie that only could happen to an older character. Like, I didn't want it to feel like, oh, we're treating this in some kind of cutesy way, or we're treating it with like a really, really heavy hand. I wanted them to just feel like, okay, if this is an adventure movie or a road trip movie or a buddy comedy or, you know, whatever it is for Thelma and Ben specifically, I wanted to treat it the way you would characters kind of any age, where just the specifics, obviously, of their circumstance are being older people. And I think, you know, my grandma has been old my entire life. Like, she was in her like late 60s, 70 when I was born, and she's 103 now. Like, her being old is like, that's such a long swath of life sometimes, not always, but sometimes. So it's like, I don't think of it as a monolith. And it's like, in living with her, she didn't feel like this separate thing. And or in growing up with her, especially, it wasn't like, oh, she's, we have our family, and then there's grandma who like lives this less meaningful, more, you know, smaller, weirder life or something. Like, she was just, it was all kind of part of the same mix. And I think that sensibility, at least, or that feeling was something that was important to me in the movie. Because I think tone and Nick did a really beautiful job with it in the music. And the music is a huge tool, I think, for how the movie stays on those rails. But tone was always kind of the thing as kind of an extension of that thought of like, how do we just make sure everything is treated in such a way that it doesn't tip? Because there were a lot of places where it felt like it could. And it was always kind of sanding down or massaging something this way or that way, just to make sure it felt kind of in the pocket.
It was a bad memory for me because I actually got scammed about a month ago.
Oh, no. What happened?
Yeah. Quite similar in that no one phoned up pretending to be my grandson because I don't have one yet. But what had happened, I got a call from the bank to say that someone had been trying to take money out. So they stopped my cards. Then a week later, I got a call from a guy who said he was from the bank saying, I'm just following up the fraud investigation. So he knew all the stuff that was going on. And I just went along with it. And then I put the phone down. I was like, I've just been scammed, haven't I? I mean, he maybe got about 150 quid out of me, but I phoned the bank straight away and they were like, yep. And I was like, but he knew all this stuff. And they were like, yep, they're really good at what they're really good at the job. And it's kind of like, man.
None of us are safe. It really is getting more insidious and it's so widespread. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's so crazy.
Yeah, I'm a great mark.
Nick's a big target.
I love Malcolm McDowell as well as the casting in this as well, and that line where she says about him being an actor, maybe not a good one, but you could
maybe just, not a star. Yeah,
yeah, it's so good.
He was a good sport. I'm glad we got him to do it. He was so perfect for that part as kind of, you know, the other side of the coin, so to speak. He and June had a good thing, I think, too. It was fun to watch some kind of to face off.
Yeah. How did you guys meet? How did you end up working together?
You want to take it, Nick? You can do it together. You start.
Yeah, we met in high school. Josh's sister is in my year. He's a couple years older than me. So I always knew Josh because Josh was a legendary improvising comic in high school. And he was like famous in the high school. And people would like, oh, Josh Margolo. We'd like you go see the group. Like we were on a different campus. So we would go to the upper school and see like, the really great improv group. And so that's how I was like, you know, that was my view of Josh. And
I wonder if we watch this now. How good
I think it'd be pretty good.
I don't know if it holds up.
And Zoe Wirth, the producer of Thelma, is my soon to be sister in law. So I have many roads to Josh's Thelma.
Nick and I have known each other. We were like friendly, but then reconnected through Zoe, really, and through Nick dating Sarah and just sort of our worlds overlapping. And, you know, I'd always been a fan of Nick's work as well. And his music has always been really unique and impressive and distinctive. And Zoe early on was talking about how she thought he would be a really wonderful fit for the movie. And so then he and I basically met early on in the process, like he was saying, before there was, you know, once there was a script, but before there was anything more, and kind of talked about how we saw it. And I think we just felt pretty early on that we were swimming in the same direction and had the same vision in mind. We'd known each other a long time, but this is the first time we've gotten to work together in this capacity, which was really cool.
I hope it's the start of, you know, that kind of director composer sort of relationship, because
I do too.
Yeah. Do you know what's next, or are you, you know, is it kind of like take a breath before you sort of jump off that diving board again?
It's a little bit of that. It's I'm working on a couple things, some of which are also with Zoe Wirth and Chris Kay, our producers and champions of this movie from day one, who I just want to give a quick shout out to for all of their amazing work on getting this thing to where it is. I'm working on a couple things that kind of the group of us want to still take out together and you know, trying to get back into some writing. It's been, I thought I could write and kind of do the rollout of the movie, and I've been gravely mistaken. So I'm trying to catch up on a little bit of that, but hopefully things will start to take shape soon.
And what about the performance side of things though as well? Is that on the back burner, or is it still something that's important to you?
I still love it. I think, you know, it's the kind of thing where when the opportunities arise, I love to do it. You know, mostly kind of writing and directing and making things has been where I've kind of shifted the bulk of my energies. But I, you know, when if the thing is right and if the opportunity arises, I do love performing. And it's always, they've always felt very connected to me for what it's worth. Like just growing up kind of making things and trying to, you know, find ways to do that. Oftentimes you're wearing a lot of different hats. And so I think to me, they all feel close together. So I think it'd be fun to you know, reintroduce it to the mix a little bit, but
yeah,
to be determined.
What about you, Nick? What's next for you?
I'm doing a documentary right now with another really great composer, Leopold Ross, who I've worked with on a lot of stuff. And then I'm doing another documentary with another composer named Claudia Sarn. That's a four-part miniseries. So those are my two main things right now.
I think what you need to do.
And then I'm getting married. So that's taking up a lot of time as well.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, I wish you all the best for the upcoming nuptials. But I think you need to get the jazz band in the room for a live playback of the film at some point.
It's a great idea. Yeah.
Now I can't stop thinking about that. Now I need to see it live all together.
Yeah.
So cool. They could all be sat in what they call the mobility scooters as well whilst they play, that the ones that sit down. That would be
That could be nice. They could do a parade kind of.
Exactly. Listen, it's been an absolute treat to get to chat to you and celebrate your work on this film, because it really, I remember seeing this trailer for the first time and I was like, oh, I want to see this so badly. Yeah, it was everything I wanted it to be and more, to be honest. So thanks so much for your time and huge congratulations with the film.
Thank you so much. That's Nick's music in the trailer too, by the way.
Thanks so much.
Nice.
Oh yeah.
What a rarity.
I know. We got to really.
Yeah, that is a rarity. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Seriously. This was
pleasure.
Really
fun. Yeah, thanks so much.
Yeah, and thanks for your kind of, you know, patience with me on the technology front as well. Please. Really appreciate it. Bye guys. Bye.
Thank you.
From the score to Thelma, that's San Fernando Road, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with Josh and Nick. My huge thanks to the boys for taking the time to talk to me, and also for Ray and the team for setting up those interviews. Thelma is in selected cinemas now, so do get along to a screening near you if you can. If you want to hear my chats with the likes of David Holmes, who of course provided the music for the Ocean's films, head to edithbowman.com or wherever you get your pods. As I said at the start, Soundtracking UK is where you'll find us on socials, and please do subscribe to our YouTube channel too, which is Soundtracking Extra. We have loads of stuff going up there. All these chats that we've done have been beautifully edited and put together and put up there for us, so go and watch them if you fancy. Next up, we've got a bit of a double header, in fact. Not quite sure whether we're going to put them out as separate interviews or episodes, or whether we'll lump them together. But we're very excited to be talking Twisters with Lee Isaac Chung, who is the man who brought us the beautiful Minari from a few years ago. Do you remember that film? Ah, such a gorgeous one. Lee talking Twisters. And then also we're excited to celebrate a beautiful film that is available now on Apple TV. It's called Fancy Dance, and it stars Lily Gladstone, who you might remember, of course, from Killers of the Flower Moon. This is a really beautiful little independent film directed by Erica Tremblay. It's her directorial debut as a feature director, full-length feature, and we had the pleasure of chatting to Erica about Lily and Fancy Dance and its origins. So I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.